here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's annual meeting. I'm at Trade Talk at the National Farmers Union booth with Roger Johnson, president of NFU. And Roger, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Washington or not going on. Here we are, still almost the end of 2013. We still don't have a farm bill.
Yeah, well, you know, last year when I was here, I predicted that by the end of the year we'd have a farm bill, and I'm going to make that prediction again. I mean, I do think we've got a better shot at it this year. We're certainly much, much, much further along. I mean, we have a bill passed through the Senate again, the second year in a row. And we have one that finally came through the House in a really mucked up manner, but nonetheless, it came through the House. And now we are in the position where they actually have the conference committee established, and they are meeting and they are working. And I think they will reconcile the differences, and we'll have a bill. I mean, the huge issue, I think, that they need to struggle with is nutrition. And there's a pretty obvious endpoint that they're going to have to end up at, and that is something a lot closer to what the Senate did than the House, or there's no route to passing in the House if they don't do that. And we're worried about what they might try to do with country of origin labeling. I honestly don't think they would do anything. If they do, I think it would really be stupid. It would be very damaging, and it may well it would make it much more difficult to pass even a conference report if they gutted the cool law at this late stage of the game without ever doing a hearing, without ever offering an amendment, without ever debating it on the floor of either house. And then to come in sort of in the dark of night at the last possible minute and stick it in a bill that cannot be amended, that would not go over well with, you know, the vast majority of people strongly defend. Cool. They want to know where food comes from, and they want to know that it's safe, and they want, you know, they don't want this sort of sleight of hand that was the case before. And in the vast majority of farmers and ranchers are proud of what they do, and they want consumers to know that this is U.S. produced beef or pork or whatever.
Were you surprised to hear Kuhl come up in the conference committee?
Yeah, I was. I mean, we'd always known that there was a chance, because there was this sort of innocuous little piece of language that was talked about a Kuhl study. But to have so many members talk about it, it was clear that there was a big push made. Now, I believe the reason they made this late push is because they are now convinced, as we are convinced, that the WTO is going to say that the USDA rule is just fine. They've already said the law is just fine. They now are going to say the rule is just fine. And the court case that the Packers brought against USDA to challenge the rule, they've already lost the first hearing on that very overwhelmingly. Every single argument they advanced was stricken down by the court in the preliminary injunction decision. And so, I mean, if you know, if you're the packing industry and you don't want to label your products as to country of origin, and you think your chance at the WTO is gone, and you think your chance in the courts is gone, the only option you have left is to change the law. And my argument is, okay, if you want to change the law, then bring up a bill. Go to a hearing, debate the bill the way you're supposed to, instead of doing it in this fashion.
Well, let's talk about the RFS. We've had a lot of pushback against the RFS, possibly looking at cutting the RVO for 2014. How do you feel about that? What do you think about the renewable fuel standard and renewable fuels in general for rural America?
we're strong supporters of the RFS and of renewable fuels. I remember, you know, for a dozen years I served as the Ag Commissioner in North Dakota, and I tell you, these were the mid-90s through much of the first decade of 2000s. And a lot of that time was spent with very, very, very low commodity prices. You know, I remember we just came out of the difficult times of the 80s, and there was all this effort made to try and grow the ag economy, to add value to what we were producing. And there was a time when we literally had more than 100 different startup value-added ag co-ops in North Dakota at one time, 100 brand new ones. You know, most of them failed, as is typical with new business formation. They typically struggle and fail. There were a few that were big successes, and they were principally in the areas of renewable energy, corn, ethanol, corn sweetener plants, those kinds of things. And the renewable fuels boom that happened as a result of those efforts was very beneficial to rural America. I mean, it was the reason that much of rural America survived during those years. And people seem to somehow forget that and think, oh, why, you know, and suddenly, you know, we've got people in the environmental community arguing that clean burning ethanol is somehow worse than oil, petroleum. I mean, give me a break. I mean, there's how do you come to that conclusion? It's just, it's like the world is turned upside down. And what has happened now is that one of the reasons the ethanol industry was able to grow was because the oil industry gave them a pass. Why did the oil industry give them a pass? Because they were having their own big issues with MTBE. It was a carcinogen. It was getting into groundwater. It was had all these enormous legal liability issues for the industry. And that was used as an oxygenate in fuel. And there's only one other alternative, and that's ethanol. And so they embraced ethanol as an additive, not as a competitor. You know, their thinking was, well, we'll build a few plants. We'll keep putting this additive. It will be fine. Well, guess what? You know, American ingenuity, farmer ingenuity, and we started developing ethanol at real scale. And suddenly the oil industry looks at this and says, oh, this isn't an additive. This is competition. You know, the RFS always presumed this was going to be competition. Always. I mean, a $36 billion RFS standard out in 2022 meant, by definition, that we were going to be somewhere in the 30% penetration of that industry. And now to argue that 10% is a blend wall? Give me a break. There was never. That blend wall issue is as fake as a $3 bill. There's no blend wall issue. What's happened is the oil industry has decided to exercise their strength in every way possible to force the service stations to not put in blending pumps, to not give consumers a choice. And as a consequence, you now restrict the supply chain. And the other alternative is E85, and that's a longer-term development path for that. So for EPA to somehow embrace that blend wall argument, if they do with this rule, I think that will be an enormous mistake. And the other enormous mistake that is in at least the leaked rule that's out, we don't know for sure if this is what's going to be out, but if they, in fact, significantly reduce the total advanced biofuel number to the number that they're talking about, that would cut current it would shut down nearly half of the biodiesel industry that's already up and running. What a dumb thing to do. And at the same time, what's the signal it sends to the investors? I mean, legitimately, cellulosic ethanol has not come along as fast as folks had hoped. But, you know, so I don't think most of us would argue with reducing that number.
Right.
But you can't reduce the total and wipe out the biodiesel that's there. And you've got to continue to send a signal that we want investment. If this leak rule were the real rule, the signal is investors, get out of here. Go away.
Well, we hope it doesn't happen. But I'm going to end it there, Roger. We really appreciate the event that NFU held earlier this year with Neil Young and really supporting ethanol. That was a beautiful event. So great to see you here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.